Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Give me some of that, yeah, meat falls off the bone, and oh, baby, I'm hungry. I said, baby, you're hungry. Is that a Nerdist podcast? Give me some meat. Nerdist. I need the Nerdist
podcast.
Oh, Mr. Spriggs. Remember 2009?
I remember 2009. I remember going to Mr. Spriggs with Cody Fisher.
Oh, Cody's Internet Safari.
It was proto Safari.
Oh, Web Soup Days.
Yeah, that was the bit that they're like, we should do more bits with Cody. I was like, that was kind of a one-off idea of mine.
Still airing them on G4.
They are. And those that residual weird checks.
What was that?
Those residual checks just keep
no.
on. No, no.
Keep on not coming.
Oh, I just thought they were building up. I thought I had to go down to the bank.
Weird satellite.
Yeah,
it's just like this sentient, partially sentient device that just has a handful of files that it's just replaying
so
over
weird.
And over again.
Every once in a while, I'll just get like someone tweeting at me going, sports ball. I go, yes.
How about that?
How about sports ball?
Office parkour. Parkour.
Parkour. I saw a gif of you doing the wall climb thing. And we had the putting up all the kids, like it was like the office people's kids pictures, and then you just do a walk on it and then slam a face.
Did they put a gift next to it of the office ripping it off?
Cool. That was so
brutal. 4 months later?
That was so brutal.
This is a hostful intro, it turns out.
No, it's not a complete hostful intro.
No, because Matt Myra's not here.
People will get very upset if you call it a hostful
intro. I'm not saying he's still doing the podcast. He's just working on it at midnight right now.
No, I know he is. You don't have to tell me that.
No, I'm telling you, but I'm just hoping that they'll overhear.
I don't know. I think they kind of glaze over these parts.
I don't know. Guys, can you just give us a second, please? Jonah, you really got to stop talking about them like they're not here because it's very rude.
What? They can't. They're going to probably just fast forward it. There's a thing where you can just do the like a sped up.
They're stupid.
Listen, you don't got to tell me that. That's all we ever talk about.
Fine. We're going to go back and we're going to finish this intro and we're going to talk to them like we, first of all, appreciate all this dumb nerd bullshit.
Ugh.
And secondly,
I just want to fucking just
be
like for one day.
The playoffs are this weekend. I want to talk about the playoffs.
God, you know these
things. You think it's easy for me?
You know these fucking glasses I've been wearing the past
four? Those are bad for your eyes. They're actually going to ruin your vision.
Yeah, and it hurts the back of my ears.
I know, buddy.
Yeah, fucking plaid shirts and the whole fucking, give me a break.
You and I have so much pussy to go through after this.
Dude, are you kidding me? And I have to spend my time fucking going, zombies!
Star Wars! Zombies!
I give a shit about any of that stuff, man.
I've not seen one episode of Walking Dead ever.
What the fuck is Walking Dead?
I don't know.
Is that reason you can't hang out on Sundays?
Yes.
Fucking A.
I know.
When the big games
they
are.
Just tell me to sit on a chair and act excited.
Jesus Christ. Okay. I can't remember the last time you were legitimate. Actually, I do remember the last time. It was when the Niners were in the playoffs.
Oh,
remember when you couldn't fucking stay down.
All right. Okay.
You got
okay.
wasted that night.
Okay. 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 Hang on. Ready? Okay. Anyway, Walking Dead's going to be great this weekend.
I love it. I can't get enough of the zombie stuff.
Sports are dumb. This episode is Jason Schwartzman, who could have been the fourth member of the Nerdist Podcast gang.
Yeah, I remember the first time he was on. It was great. I wasn't here for this one, and I was kind of bummed, but you did in New York. So
I did it in New York when I was out there for New York Comic Con. He's out there.
But he's a delight.
He is one of the sweetest, most gracious, lovely people that you could ever, so wonderful. And the first time he came on the podcast, I was so surprised that he actually listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
And he still does. It's still, he's still, when people are like, oh, I listen, I'm like, what? You do? Like, it's still weird that people actually listen.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought like it was those fucking nobodies that listen to us, not these fucking superstars.
I meant anyone, not just famous people.
Are there any other kind of famous people?
I don't know. No. He was so delightful the first time that he came on the show. And of course it was like, we got to get you back. But it still took a couple years because of scheduling and things and busy. And he's in New York and I'm here.
What's that voice?
I don't know.
What's wrong?
What's wrong with you?
Wow, you finally got tired of talking.
Why did you do that?
Your jaw just...
Get him his chai.
Well, it's the Nerdist Podcast number 585. It's 72 degrees.
Schwartzman. Right, coming up on the weekend.
Coming up on the weekend. Traffic on the ones. So I was in New York for New York Comic Con. I got to sit down with Jason. His movie Listen Up, Philip is in theaters October 17th.
Nice.
Which I believe is the day that this drops. So that is right now. You can go see Listen Up, Philip right after this podcast. Before and after, you can listen to the podcast, watch the movie. And here's Nerdist Podcast number 585 with the wonderful Jason Schwartzman.
Woo!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Say hi, hi. Oh, you sound terrible. Ah, it's okay. I feel fine. This is my voice.
So tell me in great detail everything that's happened for the last week.
Where are you staying while you're here?
Laryngitis, how do you deal with that?
So
you don't understand. It's like, yeah.
It's but I feel fine.
I've had that before. One time I completely lost my voice. And it's freaky because you're just so, you take it for granted that when you engage that muscle, that sound is going to come out. And do you want to sit there?
Wherever you want.
Okay, here.
Where you
want?
Here. You want to go here?
Yeah, sit here. So we pick up.
Great.
And I had no voice. And I was supposed to perform. It was during a San Francisco Sketch Comedy Festival in like 2008, maybe 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was the one time when I met Robin Williams. And he was backstage at this place called it was in Mill Valley, which is just outside of San Francisco. It's where a lot of wealthy hippies live. And he was so awesome, and he was riffy, and everyone, and I just couldn't get my voice, and I had to perform, and he was there, but I couldn't. It wasn't right because I didn't have a voice.
That's
so
we do take it for granted.
We do take it for granted,
and. It's probably frustrating for someone like you who is a communicator. Yeah, some people, it's fine if they lose their voice because they don't really talk much in the first place, but you have a lot of ideas and...
Everything I do, like, if the internet died and I lost my voice, those are the two things that would kill everything I do.
Well, how do you? Do you protect your voice? Do you take precautions?
No. I should. Before I did my special, I was meeting with, a voice coach for a while.
You were?
Yeah, because I don't talk properly. Like I strain to get out, and so when I'm on stage and I'm, you know, like I get very projecty, but not in the proper theater way.
No, yeah.
And then I discovered that what was killing my voice was the hands-free option in my car.
Ah.
Because I was constantly like, hey, I'm on the phone and I'm in traffic. Like, I was constantly just like shouting at this tiny microphone in the car. And so I switched to just the headset, and that helped a lot.
Interesting. Are you a Howard Stern fan?
Yes, but I don't, not to the extent where I listen often.
Well, no, he says that he figured out the trick to his protecting his voice and talking correctly was that when he is in his studio, he... in his headphones, he puts a lot of compression on his voice, the compression effect,
sure,
on his voice, so that he can really, he talks quietly, but it's
so it booms
and booms, and he feels that he doesn't have to speak as
Well, there's a performance mode. There's a performance mode that I think that I certainly get into, which is a...
You were looking on your recording device. I thought there was a performance mode.
No, yeah, it's a performance mode, and it just makes you sound cooler.
This is the one with the performance?
Yeah, it's got the... That's why you get the H1, because it kicks you into performance mode.
I gotta...
It's like turbo for the voice.
I'm gonna get one.
And now I've just realized that, you know, you've said your voice is raspy and how people make you talk, and now I'm about to make you talk for a while.
No, it's... If there's any time to be raspy and make me talk, listen, I want to...
Well, you should use it and just make it feel like you're just really...
I know.
Like really deep. Hey, man. Yeah, it's weird. Film, you know, fucking...
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
What can you say?
Just been staying out of trouble.
Just, you know, just do you, man.
Just here, man.
Just
it's a pleasure to see you on the East Coast. Here we are in New York. How was your morning? I heard you had a wild morning.
It was a while.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I did a Keanu Reeves podcast, and as I said before, it was shorter than because he was during a junket day, so they would only give us a half hour, and it was like exactly a half hour. And what I realized is that you really need that extra 30 minutes. I mean, he was amazing, but it, you know, and it was super super fun. But there were so many other things that I wanted to cover, and a half hour is just when a podcast is like really kicking into gear to really start getting personal, you know. And but he was great.
Yeah,
he's a comedy fan. He talked about seeing Sam Kinison perform, and
wow,
so he was super cool.
When it's confined amount of time like that in 30 minutes, do you have to come in armed with kind of more of a game plan as to what you want to talk to him about? Or
I probably should have. It was just more, I just bounced around a lot because there were so many different things to try to cover with him. And,
what's the first thing you said?
I think I told this story about how I was at a party, like, it was a long time ago because I was still drinking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just sitting in a chair. And I was kind of in the corner, sort of freaked out that I'm at a party that Keanu Reeves was at, because I just did not get invited to things. And he's just sitting in a chair, almost just sort of, just looking very meditative. And this girl, this beautiful girl, just like sat in his lap and started making out with him. And for some reason, I just didn't get the sense that they came there together. It felt to me like some girl just, like, this is what happens when you're Keanu Reeves. And it made me kind of want to, it was like, what is that? How's that happen?
Such a great story.
How's that work?
Yeah, I've never experienced anything like that in my life.
See, I'm not...
I've never even seen anything like that in my life.
I'm not cool enough to roll with stuff like that. Like, the comic in me would be like, oh, we're doing this now? Like, I would have to comment on it, and that would totally take the other person out of it.
Oh, I understand completely. Anyway, sorry.
No, come on.
I know, it's the truth. If a girl sat on my lap, and just started kissing me, and in this concept with someone that I didn't really know, it would be so odd.
Well, first of all, your wife might be like, hey, what's that all about?
Yeah. No, and my wife, you know, it would be weird for her. But I think, like you just said, I probably would, I wouldn't be able to roll with it, because I think that takes a certain... conditioning or something. That's like someone who's been playing soccer all their life, and because of all of the training they've done when they were little, they just have a great body for the rest of their lives with very little work. They're conditioned. So perhaps that's something that, if that happens to you enough, you don't have to comment on it, because it's like getting a
The comic gene, though, like, kills everything. I'm going to start this recording on this too, just in case the H1 has never failed me, but just in case. Just to be
is that the, that's the bigger one?
It is the bigger one.
How do you like it?
I love it. It's
really
good. Yeah, I do. I really do.
The
comic gene always gets in the way. I think sometimes people, you know, if they say to a significant other, like, oh my God, it must be so fun to date a I don't know how fun. I don't know. Because the comedy thing just, like, you have to learn. It's almost like Bruce Banner. It's like you have to learn how to control it. Like,
yeah.
I've had 37 days without a comedy incident.
I know, but it's funny because, like, I think that one of the most beautiful skills is to be able to bring levity to a situation, and there's nothing better than someone who has that kind of wisdom. And it doesn't even have to be someone by trade who's getting paid to make people laugh, but just, you know, in those terrible moments, someone who makes the great joke and then and makes everyone laugh. But yeah, they put the comedy gene or that need, like, to make a joke all the time can definitely, like, become hard for the people around that person if they're trying to truly have a moment. Because it does seem, because to them, and maybe in truth it's true, that it seems like a deflection or a way to not really be in it. And maybe that's the truth. Who knows? I feel sometimes like I've been told things that are powerful to someone or a secret, and the first thing that will pop in my mind usually is a way to make it into something that wouldn't make, but make a joke or make them laugh. But really, it's more for them to try to. I guess it's maybe comes from like a place in me to make them. For them, it's my way of saying, like, don't feel embarrassed about what you're
right,
saying,
right?
Or that you can't trust me,
right?
I guess it's like a way to try to like undercut the moment and its power, but undercut it in a great way.
Sure,
but it comes off the wrong way usually
because a joke can give you the sense that you're in control of a situation, but
yeah,
you know, for that one moment where someone makes. Where someone makes a comment that just perfectly diffuses and makes everyone feel it, you know, there's probably 1,000 whiffs that didn't work that took for that person to get to that point.
I know. It's because it's a powerful skill to really be able to do
it. It's why I never related to other kids when I was growing up. I mean, like, so many, I have such vivid memories of, for lack of a better term, I call it, like, normies, like, people who are normal and don't have to make jokes all the time. They don't really understand, a lot of them don't really understand it, and so when you do it, when you swing and miss, you know, just, I'm very familiar with that reaction where people are like, okay, you know, like, I fucking hate that reaction much, and I had it a lot. Was that, did you have that when you were growing up?
Yeah, I think that, I have it's weird, like, with memories and stuff, but I think I definitely had it more with girls probably than guys, because my school was not a humongous school where I think it just gets super click heavy,
right?
Where those are the jocks. Those are, like, in my school, it was so small that it intermingled a bit more. Like, we weren't very good at sports, so we had jocks, but they were not. They would not be jocks at any other school. It wasn't like a Division I school in all respects, but. That said, there always will be divisions, I would say that, like, most of my great friends were odd, but also, like, one of my best friends, this man named Amos Buhai, like, he's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life, like, to this day, and he was the student body president, so it wasn't like, and he was odd. We very bizarre things.
How so?
The things that were in any other school would be the normies versus the unnormies.
Yeah.
And you know, just things like just what you do in high school. Like, we all planned our friends at the finals, and the finals when we walked up in the big auditorium and handed our paper, everyone had to take off their shirt. So we just, like, took off our shirts and handed them the paper. Just little things like that. But they weren't... We didn't get a lot of normie looks.
Right.
We got laughs. I guess maybe that was at school. But I feel like from girls, maybe I got a bit more, like, huh? Not from guys as much. But for sure I didn't, like, that said, it's funny, like, you say I felt like an outsider. Did you say I felt like an outsider?
Oh, I didn't feel like it. I was,
yeah,
completely.
Yeah, I definitely, like, felt I had the best friends, and I felt so good. I had great people around at the same time around me, but at the same time I felt also very separate sometimes, and I don't know, I think that's why, like, music and movies and stuff are so wonderful, because it becomes like this, you know, like, cliche headphone kid with headphones on.
Yeah.
It's a meaningful thing. It's a real feeling. It's a real feeling of acceptance isn't the right word, but a place that you can go where, like, the song In My Room,
yeah,
by the Beach Boys really kind of sums it up. But you know, it's funny, I really think about this a lot with how I relate to kids. And I remember, like, my little cousin Gia, and then my niece and nephews being little and being able to make them laugh and be making jokes and stuff. At a certain point, that not working anymore. and getting a lot of looks from them at things like, I remember one of them saying, I think, like, why are you so crazy?
Right.
And it was odd because I didn't know then how to relate to them. And what? How do you go from Coco Snoopy Pants how is school going for you? You know, it's a hardship. And
how is Coco Snoopy Pants?
Yeah. How have you heard from Coco Snoopy?
Is Snoopy Pants good?
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
Also boogers? No.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Hard boogers. and I definitely feel that with my daughter. Like we are the best of friends and we're nuts together, and I'm sort of dreading the day when she's like, you're weird, Dad.
There will be a point where you're going to cramp her style.
Yeah, and that's, so I'm just trying to get away with murder, I guess, at this point. But it's something that I think
about.
But
you and your daughter go murder people together?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so crazy. Well, that's how you entertain her?
These are the perks. These are some of the perks.
No one would suspect a child murderer.
And that's really why we had kids, my wife and I. We really had to scratch that itch, but I couldn't afford to take...
No.
I couldn't afford to go away to prison.
And you can't take the career hit.
No, I just... Things are... You know how this business is.
Of course.
If you're out for 1 second, you're...
Yeah.
They're waiting to keep
on you. If they could imprison you, like, in a recording studio and you had
I'll kill them all on live television.
Yeah, exactly. But until that happens, yeah, because they're not going to send her to jail. How old is she? Like 4 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
They can't even try her really, even as a minor.
Yeah.
She's too young to be a minor.
Yeah, Your Honor, could this child really stab through this man's vest? I mean, yeah. I don't think so.
Especially with that straw.
It's offended. Exhibit A, the crazy straw.
But it's funny, and then there's things with children too that these are, you know, this is all very personal stuff to talk about. But the other day, my daughter and I were just so goofy and have fun, and we were out with one of her friends, and she was like making all this stuff, and the kid we were with was like, I don't know what you're talking about, and it was a normie, as you say.
Right.
And my daughter was. Seemed like she, I felt like, oh, because of my ways of being silly around her, did I, like, set a style or a tone for what is the way to party and interact with people, and have I set her up for these looks that you're describing? But that's just life, and you just do. You
know, honestly, I think it's a much more interesting path.
Yeah.
Than. You know, like, I wouldn't, of course I didn't feel this way at the time, but I would not go back and be a normal kid.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it would have robbed me of all the things that I became interested in and all the paths that I went down if everything was just super, super easy. So
it's hard to tell someone that too. My cousin Gia growing up, I remember had, it seemed like she was, or just my nieces and nephews too seemed, you know, normal things of getting picked on, and you just want to say it doesn't really matter. Just do your thing, and they'll you know what I mean. It's when someone's great, how do you let someone know they're great and really try to get that through? It's a hard thing, but yeah, for sure. Like, but there's two kinds of people who feel like outsiders, and I admire the level Exhibit A outsider, which is the one that is an outsider and doesn't give a shit,
right?
And it's like, you know, fuck you, and yeah. they want to be separate. I felt an outsider, but I wanted to be liked. And
of course, me too.
When I hear interviews like with people, or read interviews with people that just always knew they were different, and that was just the way it was, I'm like, oh, it's so admirable.
I got a question though, whether or not that is real. Like, if they were that cavalier about it when they were younger, or
who knows? Yeah.
Does everyone feel? I mean, I wonder if everyone just feels like outcast when they're young.
Yeah.
Because you really, you know, you're sort of just navigating this course that there's no real map to, and you're just sort of guessing, and, you know, but I do think there are some people that shit comes easier for, but I think if you were to go back and talk to people that you thought had it super figured out when they were young, they'd be like, I didn't know what I was
doing. I'll tell you one thing, though. I recently had a part in a Tim Burton movie, and I'm sure, as you know, I mean, that's very exciting.
Of course.
And his movies were very meaningful to me, and but because I wasn't, I had a smaller part, he was focused on a much bigger picture, I wasn't going to most likely have a lot of time to sit and talk to him. And for me, that's like a very important thing, is to feel like the director, like, I can spend time with the director, and kind of just by gauging how they react to things, sort of know maybe what they want when we go to work, so that, like, we can be efficient.
Right.
Because I could throw out a lot of bad ideas, so if I can sort of know where the fence is, it will help me. But I knew I wasn't going to be afforded that luxury, so I bought these interviews, like, I think it's Burton on Burton, just all of his interviews. Faber, the publishing company, does all these directors, like Cassavetes on Cassavetes. It's just all there. And one thing you see when you read his book that's so fascinating is that he's basically always been the same guy, but in a great way. I mean, he's obviously grown, but his core set of principles, even from, like, the first interview in 1984 or whatever, he's always been saying the same thing. At a young age, it's pretty remarkable.
I mean,
it's totally there as a who he is and what he is interested in and finds fascinating. It's totally realized at a young age. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, especially with that guy. I'm sure he's certainly evolved and grown in ways, but his vision seemed so clear from the get-go, and it was so like, this is this!
Exactly. Even his drawings as a kid, you have them, and it's exactly...
It's all those weird, like stripe-wormy things.
I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's so fascinating. It's like when someone puts out a first record that's instantly the sound of the band.
Right.
You know, right there.
Which can be also become a liability at some point. If it's after a couple of times of that, and then people are like, oh, but you already did that. I'm like, yeah, but this is my voice. Like, well, hey, I don't know. Do something else. I don't know.
So tricky. It's kind of like running the first day of school, you go to PE class, we always had to run a mile, and they would time it, and then through the rest of the year, you would be graded on your mile, and it's kind of like those guys that just, they want to really run fast the first day. I always say walk the first mile.
And build up.
Yeah, you come in at a 16-minute mile and just walk it. Mm-hmm. And that way you can always...
That's smarter. That's much smarter.
It looks defeatist, but it's really optimistic.
It's funny. I mean, like, it so clearly ties together with what you were just saying about entertaining children. You know, when you think about, like... You know, like, I remember when the Strokes came out.
Yeah.
It was like, this sound, it's so different.
Yeah.
And then after, like, the second or third album, they were kind of getting shit for it. But they were probably like, well, I don't understand. This is what we do.
Yeah, and the second album, I think, is amazing. And I love all their music.
They're great and seem so sweet.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you can, you know, that an audience can sort of be like children in a way. And like, but this worked before. I don't understand.
It must be confusing.
Yeah.
It must be confusing. Julian Casablancas, I think, is so talented. It's unbelievable. And even his new record, I don't know if you've heard it, but it's so ambitious and very wild. And I love it. And I just, like, smile when I listen to it because it's taking so many just bold choices. And I really admire.
I think he's great, and I love them. And I've been really stuck on every year when it's my birthday, I start a new playlist. And I'm...
When's your birthday?
It's November 23rd. And so I'll start a new music playlist that is named after what my age is. And then just whatever songs I'm listening to throughout the year, I'll just throw in this playlist. So it's just sort of, it's kind of like just a musical diary of my
year.
Of
the year before.
Yeah, of each year. Yeah. Like, when I find that I'm kind of stuck on a song, I'll throw it in the playlist so that it just sort of anchors all the emotions or whatever I was feeling. And there is an amazing Punch Brothers cover of Reptilia.
Huh.
That is so fucking good, but it's that but bluegrass.
I'd love to hear that.
I will play it for you. It's really, but it. Well, here, yeah, I'll just play a second for you right now, since we're here, and you know we can ultimately do whatever we want. Where are you? Where are you? Here it is.
Strings being hit.
The hit, percussion. Like percussion.
It's awesome.
Do you know these guys, the Punch Brothers?
I don't know their records. I know who they are.
I've probably listened to this 100 times in the last week. I'm not going to make it sit through the whole thing.
No, that might be more than I ever did. Is that live or something?
Yeah, they're doing it at a radio station.
It has that echo.
Yeah, the echo.
The reverb.
Yeah. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Do you ever want to... Are there songs you want to? Do you have like a cover list where of stuff where you're like, oh, I gotta someday.
Well, you know, that's such a. I think that covers. I love covers, and but it's so tricky. I mean, I think like to put out a cover in a way, like to release a cover. I don't know if I don't have any plans to do anything like that, but. I believe, just as with any, like, thing that one does, regularity and constant, just constant playing is great for, you know, for acting, anything. And music, I think the more you can do it, the better. And, I try to play music every day, but, and come up with ideas, that are even if they're terrible, it just feels good to do. But I think that even putting on a record and listening to it and learning it and trying to see what the songwriter was sort of thinking when they wrote it is so beneficial. So I don't necessarily cover songs and record them as a thing to do. But I love to learn other people's songs.
Oh, nice.
Just for my own sake. And I try so hard to not do it by looking at a book or looking up the chords. Because even if it takes 2 hours, that's a great 2 hours, I think, of just struggling to learn something. And I'm not saying learn it in the exact way they're really doing it with the, you know, the voicings and stuff. But just the basic chord progression... Learning it, trying to learn it by ear and messing around is fun and also can lead to you can mess up and be like, oh, that might be good for something I could do.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I've covered some songs on my own One that I really love, one song that I love is the song Candy Says by the Velvet Underground. Mm-hmm. Do you know that song? Mm-hmm. And it's just the most bizarre chord progression, and I just love that. But I don't have like a repertoire of cover songs that I could just rip out of my bagpipe.
So if we came over to your house, you wouldn't be like, more than a feeling. Like, you have your like your bar covers that you would break into that, and then like Brown Eyed Girl, and
I have a couple that I could do that would either make you some. I've learned to just make people smile. And then some I could probably do, but I usually, like, you could tell that I gave up. Because I can only really get to, like, just into the bridge, and then I kind of go, and you know how the
rest. Yeah, I mean,
like,
I don't want
to... So I give up. I mean, I give up. But I don't know if you've ever met Michael Cera before, but...
Oh, not really. Like, we've sort of met briefly. So, yeah.
I don't know if you know, he's an incredible musician. He actually released a record this year. And, but he really takes the time. Like, he'll be like, you want to play it? You want to do the song together? And we'll play it, and I'll just kind of like be faking it, and then he'll like do this solo note for note, and he learns how to play everything exactly like it's done, and that's impressive. I'm sort of like, I'm just like, I do it. My approach to covering a piece of music or learning it is kind of like an adult at a park with his kids.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of play, but then I say, go, run. You go. I kind of give up. They go, let's play. No, no, I'll be down here. I'll be the monster that doesn't get up from the bench. You come over here and... <you're> like, I'll be the guy, you got to come scare me.
Yeah.
I'll be asleep and you got to come.
Yeah.
I'm trying to...
It's like for Halloween, it's like, no, I'm an alien disguised as a human.
That's my approach to
it. Yeah, I'm an alien disguised as the guy from Rushmore.
You strike me as someone who gets it together for Halloween.
I usually do get it together for Halloween.
You have it together yet?
No, not yet. And it's late. We're mid-month, man. And I'm really worried about
it. Amazing that you'd even say that, because I never get it together till...
Oh, fuck. Well, I've just been... There isn't anything that I feel like... I mean, with Halloween costumes, it can be very tricky because... Or with cosplay in general, you're like, well, I want it to be good.
Yes.
But I don't have too much time. I mean, for me, I don't have too much time spending it. But I don't want it to be one that everyone... It's like, an easy one could be like, oh, I'll just be Star-Lord because Guardians was great. And, you know, it's like, but everyone's going to be Star-Lord this year. Mm-hmm. Even though I think Chris Pratt and I have similar... coloring.
Yeah.
And so it'd be easy to do that one. I don't have an 8-pack in my abs.
You are fit.
But I'm in good shape, but I'm not like... you can't... You know, like, you couldn't have, like, the Labyrinth marble game through my abs
and then
watch it go.
Yeah.
I kind of just belly danced for you, which was very weird.
No, I like it. I like that you were playing your own
game. I was playing my own stuff.
Because I like to play your...
The tilt. And so I don't know what the costume's going to be this year. I really don't.
What were you last year?
What was I last year? Shit. God, I can't even remember now. The days for me... Do you find the days are just... Well, I'm living so much in my short-term memory because I have to just, like, get done everything that I can get done in a day, and then the next day it starts all over. I'm missing SWATs.
I'm so curious because I love your show, and I have also other podcasts that I listen to, and you by far have the quick... You always have new people. Are you literally doing them every day?
No, I think it's... We usually do... we record like 3 to 5 a week. And they're just sort of sandwiched in.
So is the rest of... Like, how do you manage your day? It's funny, this morning I got up, I was like, I wonder what we're going to talk about. I was thinking, the one thing I would really love to talk to him about is how he manages his time.
Oh, I studied time management when I started getting my shit together about 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading time management books and just like dumb business books about how to manage things and time and how to manifest intentions and all this stuff. And just because I was such a fuck up before, so I'm like, well, even if this stuff doesn't, even if it's dumb, at least it's better than what I was doing before. And so I started to learn how to create these kind of like modular pockets in the day and what's my optimal performance rate at how long before I start to check out, like what, how, you know, so you can, you know, Huh. If you just for a couple days, just have a timer with you, and every time you start a new task, you just start it. You start the timer, and then you forget about it until you're done with the task, and then you can turn it off. And then it starts to give you a sense of like, oh, so this is how long it takes me generally to do this. Like, you know that if you're going to write for a half hour, it might take you 12 or 15 minutes before you really are mm-hmm. kicking into your mode. Mm-hmm. And sort of understanding your personal data like that gives you a much better sense of, okay, well, I can sandwich in a writing thing at this time of the day because I know that this mm-hmm. is how. And then you can actually start improving on it a little bit. So, but honestly, now I have a really amazing assistant who has also taken a lot of the logistical work mm-hmm. off my shoulders. And everything is like, if you look at my calendar, I have like 6 different color calendars, and everything is just very perfect.
And what happens though if, when you have a calendar and it's set up and someone has to change something,
mm-hmm.
Which
always happens.
And how do you deal with that? Like, how do you deal with taking that kind of a curveball?
You have to be willing to lose things, and then you have this sort of internal priority system where you go, well, this person can go a half hour later. Can I shift the thing later? Can I flip-flop it? Is that other thing something that's essential for the day? Mm. It really is just, you have this sort of like DEFCON scale in your head where you go, well, this must get done today because I will never, see this. I'll never get this other opportunity. I'm the one that's get this again, and this other person can move. And so you figure out how to be flexible. Right. And you do try to keep some holes here and there for those eventualities. You're like, okay, well, I kept this hole on Thursday, so I can shift this over to Thursday. And if you don't have to do that, then I know. Like, I get excited for, like, I don't want to call them, like, micro vacations, but I know that if I have 3 hours off at any point, I get very excited about that because that's just 3 hours that I have.
What do you do?
I don't lie around. Lately, it's been furniture shopping because I'm trying to buy furniture for a house. Or, I don't know, something that... What I really should do is nothing.
Right.
But I'm really terrible at that.
But sometimes doing nothing can... Could maybe take the wind out of your sails a little and slow you down, and you have to, like, re-ramp. Like, sometimes it's good to keep going.
Well, but you're busy, and you have a child, too, which I would imagine takes up...
Well, that's why I'm trying to ask you about it, because I think it's a work in progress.
Oh, yeah, and you cannot predict... with your child, I would imagine, it's not like, oh, well, she's going to want to play from 2 to 4, and then, she's kind of, I would imagine, relatively unpredictable in that way.
Yeah, it's both. It's like sometimes it's pretty. I mean, it can be pretty regimented, and then at the same time, yeah, there's things that you just cannot account for that affect things. So you try to build in little padding, like you're saying.
You would have to be flexible and patient as a parent.
Do you work out?
Yeah.
So that's in your schedule?
3 times a week.
When is that? In the morning?
It's in the morning.
Before anything happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Early?
It's not super early because, I mean, I work out at... It's not bad. I work out at 9 on Tuesdays and Thursdays and then noon on Saturdays. But when I exercise at 9, that means I usually have to get up at 7 because I have to eat by 7:30 so that by 9... Because if you eat too close to exercising, will want to puke your lungs out.
And you want to exorcise.
And you want to exorcise and evacuate the contents of your body. And but if you don't eat, then you will fucking die.
Yeah.
So
you go to it. You have, like, someone that helps you work out and stuff.
I have a trainer. I've had the same guy for like 9 years.
I'm gonna call that guy.
He's amazing.
He's in Los Angeles.
He's in Los Angeles. Yeah, he's amazing.
I would love to.
I love him because he's not. He's not a I will break you kind of a trainer. He'll when you get there, he's like, how are you feeling today? And then you can tell him exactly how you feel. And his whole goal is to make sure that you leave feeling better than when you got there. And some days that's more intense, and other days it might just be stretching and a little bit of cardio stuff. Hmm. But he is determined that you will leave feeling better.
Are some days just go and have a cup of coffee and talk about things?
No. and a lot of the days, it's not like I fucking wanna get up and eat at 7:30 in the morning, but I just know that you know, I think our brains are usually just concerned with short-term happiness.
Yeah.
And so your brain, most people think that what their brain is telling them is law. Like, well, if your brain tells you this, it must be true. And it's like, no, your brain has good intentions, but those aren't always the best things for you.
Hmm.
So if your brain says, like, don't get up now. You don't have to get up now. Why would you want to go exercise? You don't have to do that. And you go, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like, you just have to ignore it. And then it's better for your long-term happiness.
I agree. It sounds like, well, I had a revelation the other day that I was talking to my neighbor, and I said, isn't this weather beautiful? It's crazy. And he was like, yeah. And I realized the look on his face is that he thought this was small talk. And I realized that, to me, that's my favorite thing to talk about, is the weather, or what did you have for breakfast, or what is your daily routine like?
Yeah.
More than, what was it like when this person died?
Right.
In a weird way, I love to know about...
What was the weather like when that person died?
Yeah, what was the weather like? What did you have for breakfast the day of the funeral? I love that stuff, and I got a great book. Is it called... I think it's called Daily Rituals. It's a book. It might be called either Daily Rituals or Daily Habits. I think it's Daily Rituals, and it's... I don't know what you kind of call this kind of book, but it's a collection of little mini biographies, but just about people's creative habits,
mm-hmm.
from Frank Lloyd Wright to Gustav Mahler to, like, just songwriters, actors, and... through, I guess, interviews, someone compiled sort of quick way to digest what people's work habits are like.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally fascinating because it's totally different for everybody.
I would love to read that.
I've bought this book for people. It's just fun, and you... What's really interesting is a lot of writers, for instance, they're so different, and... But all of them do build into the day... time to do nothing. They get up, have breakfast, drink coffee, read the paper, take a shower, dilly dally, think about what they're gonna write, settle down to write, and then write for 8 hours straight. And that seems incredible to be able to have that, and then have dinner at midnight, 2 more hours of writing, then to bed.
Well,
up at 10.
I think it's not... unfortunately, I think the more responsibilities you have, and then the older we get, all of the leisure things,
yeah.
like all the hangouts and everything, the planning of it becomes less sexy, because you have to say, from 8 to 11 will be my leisure time, and this
yeah.
is when I... But if you don't do that... then months will go by and you haven't seen your friends, you haven't
yeah.
seen a movie,
yeah, yeah,
you haven't
yeah.
done, you know...
I know.
Because you're so... Especially because, you know, the danger of creative jobs is that they never really end. And so
yeah.
you could be thinking about songwriting, or you could be thinking about
yeah.
acting or movie or anything, and...
Or just, like, computer. I mean, anything. Like,
yeah.
it doesn't... anything... And that's not work. I mean, even that is work. It all starts to become like one big thing.
But you seem to me like you really take time to marvel and appreciate the world.
Well, that's because I have a hard time focusing. And so I am a bit of a daydream Johnny. And I will... I wish I was more efficient. And so it's not like I take the time on purpose to do it. I end up realizing that I've... totally spaced out for an hour and, like, had a really busy day, but why am I at this record store right now? I space out a little, and so it's not like, yeah, I do it on purpose, but I just, like, I think I maybe fundamentally am, maybe I am lazy fundamentally, I have a bad concept of time. And hopefully we'll get better, but...
I don't know. It sounds like you just enjoy things. Like, I mean, you're obviously not lazy because you...
I'm lazy.
No, but you get stuff done.
It's odd how it happens, but... one thing that I've had to deal with that I think is, like, really interesting, when you're talking about time management. When is my brain the best? And then, can those things... Do you work around those things? Or, for instance, like... one time I made a record with this producer who... He knew... I am the best from 12 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the opposite. Like, most, like, people in the band, like, they overdo they're in the studio all night, but 12, it was great, because your ears do get fatigued, maybe, and that was sort of his concept, but naturally, my brain, and it's almost like maybe how, I don't know if you felt this way in high school, but like, in high school, first period, second period, I mean, I was the fluorescent lights buzzing. My eyes were, I couldn't keep them open, and I was so tired. And really, about 2 o'clock, like just before school would get out, I would get really optimistic, and mm-hmm. I think that's maybe big school is going to be over.
Right.
Something in the air changes, the light becomes different, and my brain like kicks into like, and to this day, the day is sort of something that I feel like I've got to just like kind of get through
mm-hmm.
until it's 4 or 3 or 4, and then I'm like, I want to do everything that was asked of me. I'll organize my bookshelves, I will run errands, anything you'd like, I will do. And my brain just feels like it's best, and that will continue until about midnight or 1. But I feel like I sort of have, you have to change it once you've got children, because you've got to get up with them. But it's been hard because I feel like I'm trying to change my natural way of wanting to do things.
Which maybe you don't need to do. I mean, it's possible that...
But sleep, they say, it's the most important thing. And I'll tell you, for various reasons, I've had to be up for over 48 hours multiple times in the last few months. The other day I slept I'd slept 5 hours in about 3 days. And it was funny because you really can feel the effects. It's amazing. I was talking to somebody, and they'll describe like a fog rolling in out of nowhere. I was talking to someone, and while I was talking, I had a horrifying moment where I realized I don't know what I'm supposed to be talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just kept going, and then I eventually had to say, what is it that you asked me? And it's true, the brain, it's amazing. The brain gets so, if it's not rested, it's terrible. And so rest is very important.
Well, I just think that if you start to understand how you are most efficient, like when you're most efficient, how you're most efficient, that it takes a lot of pressure off you, because you go, oh, well, the deal that you make with yourself is, okay, between this hour and this hour, I can free that up, because I know that this is how I am during that time.
Yeah.
As long as, you keep the other part of the bargain, which is, but between this and this, I am going to do the things that I'm supposed to do. Then it just sort of takes the pressure off you, and you don't have to feel like you're not doing
that's
stuff.
That's fine with me. I mean, in that case, I would just say to people, from 9 to about 5, I'm pretty much free. I meet you for a movie. Like, all day, I'm free.
But at 5 o'clock, I gotta go to work.
At 5 o'clock till midnight, don't talk to me.
But then you go do a movie, and then that fucks up your schedule. Because
Yeah. But that is slightly different. I think my brain, but I am tired. Like, in the morning, I have a hard time. But just push through that with some music. And also, I think... being on a movie set is so different than your day-to-day life, because so much hustle and bustle that it's exciting. You know what I mean? I'm perked up by the communal efforts of making a movie. But if I was alone from those hours, it's hard. But anyway, but I don't want to talk about how tired I am. It's like the most annoying thing. So we could
hear no, but it's
just, but I mean, it's more just that I'm interested in other people's. You should get that book.
I will.
I will send it to you.
Well, some people, there's some theories that you should just sleep, 90 minutes every few hours.
Yeah.
And never have like a full night. I mean, I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'd heard that Edison used to sit in his chair with a weight.
Yeah.
And then he would, just as he would doze off, and then his hand would relax, he'd drop the weight, and he would snap too, and like that was like a micro nap.
I've never heard that specific story, but I've heard, if you want to take a correct nap, you hold a pencil, and when it drops, that's when you...
And then when you freak out and jab yourself in the eye with it, you know it's time to wake up.
But a pencil dropping would not wake me up. I will sleep. Once I sleep, if nobody wakes me up, I will sleep forever. Not in a deceased way, but basically forever. Recently, because of all this work and stuff, I went to bed at... I went to bed at 2 in the morning, and we didn't have work for a long time until the next day, and my phone died. It wasn't able to set my alarm. So I plugged it in, and it was charging somewhere else, and I went to sleep, and when I woke up, it was dark outside, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe it's 5 in the morning. Why can't I sleep? And then I got up and looked, and it was about 6 p.m., so I slept from 2 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Holy shit.
So that's a lot. That's a long.
Oh, my God. Did you feel...
Terrible.
Of course you feel terrible. It's just too much sleep.
Absolutely terrible. I rushed out of bed. I got out of bed, and the sun was just setting here in New York, and it looked like people were celebrating the end of the most beautiful day they'd ever had. It was like, what a beautiful day. It was the weather. And it was a feeling of almost like homesickness. Like, I miss it.
Yeah.
It was a loss. I lost a day of my life.
What happened? Because first of all, you don't know where you are. You don't know what happened.
But it was. But then I think of those two things. You're never going to get that back. Then you just got to walk around with a smile on your face and go, that's fun. I had a strange afternoon.
But this is my favorite time of year, though. I don't know. I just get so. This sort of like really cool feeling rolls in for me in the fall. Even though, technically, you know, Los Angeles doesn't really have seasons. It's just, in a week or two, it'll stop being 100 degrees. But just this sort of, I don't know, it's just a very cozy sort of, it's nice.
It is nice, and I also associate it with sports. I like sports, watching sports, and football, and on Sundays I watch football. My daughter and I make pizza.
Oh.
And watch football at night together and stuff, and... Maybe one could argue, why are you showing your daughter something so violent? But it's so fun. She really has no idea what's going on, and that's sort of what's become surreal about it.
I think the important thing is that you guys are spending time together.
Yeah, and with pizza.
And you're murdering with her, which I think is a bonding experience.
Killing.
Yeah.
Killing.
Yeah, the kill room has the cute little bunnies on the wallpaper.
Yeah, we have little heads. Are you, I'm sure that you've brought this up multiple times, but have you ever... I mean, I only just realized how weird or interesting it is that comedians say things murdered or killed when things are funny, and I'm going to slay.
Yeah.
It's so, destroy. It is so violent. I'm going to destroy it, killed, it murdered, I murdered, I killed them.
I don't know what...
I blew them away.
I don't know what the etymology of that is. I guess it's...
It's probably just like... It's just like... just mowing people down with.
I guess it's just a. It's.
I've never even say he went up on stage. He was so funny.
he smothered the audience.
Yeah, he smothered.
He was really funny. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just, you know, it's just the way that sort of hyperbole that we. It has to feel intense in some way, and there's no. It's almost like there's not an equivalent word of joy intensity that there is of like murder. Yeah. You know, is completely that's a very evocative type of a.
But you don't hear it with bands. Like, you don't say to a guy like, "You guys murdered up there."
Yeah.
You guys that you rocked or whatever.
Right.
And I guess like if someone was on stage, I mean, I don't know many actors on stage, but you killed them.
You killed
them. Absolutely murdered them.
Music.
But it does feel like it. I think with comedy, it's the best way to say it, I think. Also because you just walk off stage, over, and you're going to leave them there, and then someone else comes up. Maybe there's some territorial... I don't know.
I don't know what it is, actually. I'm really trying to piece it together. I'm like, well, is it because you're changing the... Because you're completely in control of the environment, and you're changing the situation. Yeah. You're completely in control of the situation.
That's what I'm saying. You're
both like but I feel like, you know, with music, there's.
But you do say that song kills me.
I guess so, I think with comedy, it's so instantaneous, and I feel like music can be music is a more prolonged and drawn out enjoyment. Yeah. You know, like it's more of a journey, and comedy is more of a quick like.
Yeah.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
You know, and unless you're a specific genre of music, like, it's not really that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So it's so probably boring to talk about.
But. No, I'd never actually even thought about it. I genuinely had never even thought about it before. It was just always been a given.
And I just realized I play someone with a podcast recently, in the show I'm doing, Mozart in the Jungle.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that, I'll tell you about it later, but it's not based on you or anybody, but I think doing your show really was so helpful to me for doing that.
Well, I mean, you were the... I think you were... when you, it's been like 2 years, I think, when you came on the last time, because we were still in the E building, but you immediately fit in, like right away, where it sort of felt like, oh yeah, if you wanted to do this, you could just be like the fourth guy on the podcast.
I don't know how you do it. Now here's, I honestly will tell you this, and it's that I get really starstruck, and but oddly, like I go from really really starstruck to gushing. If I do talk to someone who's famous, then I can't hold it together. So I'm not in that middle ground where it's like, hey, and I will, you know, where one person who's famous, like you'll see like someone who's famous, you know, like I don't know, two actors or something will meet each other and they're just like, yeah, how's it going? Yeah, oh, really? I will say, oh man, you love that thing or this thing. And I would think to have a podcast and to talk to people and really get to know all these people that you've met would be very frightening to me. And a long time ago, like, I always dreamt of wanting, because I love interviews and I love interview books too, just like long compilations of interviews and or anthologies of them, and thought, oh man, one day I'd love to have a show where I could talk to people. And at one point I was like seriously thinking about it, and my cousin Roman and I, like, let's just rent a space and get a few people, maybe like ask a few people that we'd like to talk to, invite them to come talk, and we started to come up with a list of people who could come in, and it would be, how about this person? Oh, that'd be amazing. Should we ask them? No. I'd be too afraid to talk to them. How about this guy? Oh man, could you imagine? Let's call him. No way, I'm not gonna talk to that guy.
Can't talk to that guy.
And I wonder, like, maybe we talked about this before, but are you nervous?
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, if you ever want to do that thing, I will pay for it, because you should totally do it.
No, I don't. I would do it for.
But here's the thing about it is that, you know, the first, I'm going to say even like 3 years of the podcast, I used to get a lot of shit from people in reviews and whatever, who would say that I basically just slobbered all over everyone. I mean, like, I have that mechanism. But I think part of that is, like, A...
Well, wait, that's because you love these people.
I do love these people, and I feel like they are deserving of that, you know? And also, I want people to know that they're safe and comfortable and they're appreciated and supported, and I feel like that's when people open up. I've gotten a lot more comfortable... I still geek out on people. Like, I was here for New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And in the last 2 days, you know, Thursday I did a panel with Brad Bird and Hugh Laurie and George Clooney. And yesterday was Michael Keaton and Edward Norton.
Oh,
and so it was just sort of like, me from 2 years ago would not have been able to handle that situation very well. And I would have gotten really in my head. And like, like where you feel your voice is in your throat.
Yeah.
But honestly, I've done it so much now. And also I've had a couple experiences with people that were those kind of like, oh, you know, and survived them, that I'm just not like, you know, I don't know. I've got a lot more comfortable with myself, which is amazing. Maybe it's age or maybe it's just, but if you did it a handful of times, you would feel fine. I talked to Michael Keaton for like 20 minutes about curling yesterday backstage.
About the sport?
Yeah.
Wow.
He did it once and he thought it was amazing, and we're talking, and all of a sudden I had to step out of my body and go, if you had told me when I watched Night Shift like 150 times that I would be making curling jokes with this guy, like it still resonates with me, but for some reason I've learned how to compartmentalize it, and you would if you did it more. But I still can't believe,
like, here's an example. Like, I just, it's so many things that I think growing up too in the 80s and cable television, you spend so much time with things that, like, become your canon of things that aren't even, like, maybe things that are, like, you know, well, like an example would be, not recently, oh, it's strange, like, 8 years ago, I met Mark Singer, the Beastmaster, and he was walking out of a movie theater, and I was like, I'm so sorry, but I'm such a huge fan, and Kodo and Podo, your gerbils, ferrets, they mean so much to me, and that movie, and he said, oh, thank you, and he went to shake my hand. I don't know if you've seen Beastmaster, but he shakes hands like this.
Oh, like the Roman style?
He went to shake my hand, he goes, oh, thank you so much, and I went like that, and it was without thought. And so it's things like that, like that these people, I mean, I watched that movie a ton growing up, and, you know, so, or someone like Michael Keaton, that would be probably more difficult than most people, because those movies that's of, you know, Beetlejuice and also Johnny Dangerously.
Johnny Dangerously is fucking great.
Very, like, that, you know, that's something, like, I saw a lot, and, yeah, so, anyway, it's not like, I would just be nervous. I would be really, I'm really scared, especially, you know, like, and sometimes it'll backfire, but my wife has been so good about, and also having a kid, I'll tell you, for me, like, I'm someone who doesn't do a lot of things that are, like, I've been asked in the past maybe to do with something like, would you interview this person, or would you want to do it in a magazine, would you interview this, and I say no, and it's because I'm afraid. But when I had my child, sort of thought, well, I don't want her to, like, see or hear a person around the house that's not, who's afraid to do a lot of stuff.
Sure.
So I, like, really been aware of, like, saying, like, trying to say yes to things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. And it, usually it's as unpleasant as I imagined it would be. it's not like I was like, hey, who's this so afraid of? This is pretty great. It's like, this is terrible, and I hate my child right now. Why did, in a weird way, she make me do this?
She made you do this.
But you know, it's, so you try to, like, do things that are the opposite of you, and I remember, recently I was in Los Angeles, and I was walking past a coffee shop, and Malcolm Gladwell was sitting outside typing on a computer, and I was thinking, oh, he's writing his book, and so I walked by with my wife, and then we...
Sexting? He was sexting?
He was sexting, yeah. He was, like, tilting there. Anyway, and walked by, and I said to my wife, it was Malcolm Gladwell, and, I mean, I'd love to go. You should go. You should go. I can't. He's working, and probably it'll probably be terrible, and it will not be terrible, I promise you. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to go. And it was so weird. He was like, walked up, and he was like, he was lost in thought, kind of like this, with his chin looking off, chin in his top of his hands looking off. And I walked, like, into his peripheral atmosphere, sort of like thinking maybe he'll feel me, he'll feel my presence. So I walked up, and, like, he's sort of like where that tea kettle is, and so I went up, and he's, like, looking at that one, and I was like, and says,
you get closer.
I was, like, really close. Excuse me. Now I'm, like, literally, like, and he goes, ha! I kind of spooked him. And I was so upset. And he's like, yes, hello. Yeah, Mr. Glava, I just want to say, I'm sorry for scaring you, and I'm a big fan. That's all I want to say. I'm sorry. And I walked away. And it was, I'm like, how'd it go? I don't know, pretty good once I got over the fact that I alarmed him. So, you know, it's tricky with...
You could have made a dumb joke like, sorry to make you blink.
Oh.
Up top, no?
Sorry,
no?
I knew I shouldn't have come over here from the second I walked past you.
Didn't mean to be an outlier in your peripheral vision.
Sorry, sorry.
Well,
I guess I saw what the dog saw.
Well, it's also... it was helpful that in the specific situation yesterday, that Mr. Keaton was also really affable and nice.
He is, right?
Sometimes, like, you know, if you catch someone in a weird moment or that you feel that they're defensive,
yeah,
then, you know, then you just don't push it. And you're like, okay, it's nice to see you. And then you kind of walk
but
away.
But in public, like, will you go up to someone now? For your, you know, these are
no.
These are instances where you are going to meet with them.
Mm-mm.
If you're in a restaurant, you're like, Michael Keaton sitting over there.
Mm-mm. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
For the sake, because
I would never.
Because
go
I feel
somewhere.
Like, because in
who
my
are you to go like who people? Yeah, yeah.
In my head, it you know, where you go like, well, I'm gonna say something amazing, and we're gonna be friends, and we're gonna. But in certain situations. You know, like, the playing field is level.
Right.
Like, if you're in an award show and everyone's there and you're all kind of in the same situation, mm-hmm. everyone's nervous, everyone's defenses are down. But if they're eating or if they're at a mm-hmm. bar or something... But I think it's also why...
But wait, is everyone nervous at an award show? Because I don't go to a lot of those types of things. And last year, Saving Mr. Banks, the movie I was in, was at an award-type show. And we went and we had a table and I was looking around. I felt like we were talking about high school. Everybody here between these awards getting up and going to the other table, slapping each other on the back, they know each other, and how do they all know each other?
You still feel like the outcast.
Well, I mean, I literally was like, man, they all seem to talk to each other. They all go to each other's tables. They're all making jokes. They're throwing, like, bread to each other.
What if you threw bread at someone, like, hit Jeff Bridges in the face and be like, what the fuck, kid?
Oh, my. Who threw that?
I don't know. I think it was Malcolm Gladwell.
Tom Hanks. But I'll tell you, too, like... yeah, sorry. So keep going.
No, what?
But you're a level playing field. It's, yeah, I mean, I'm just so curious about all those people. And I guess maybe you're right. They just all feel...
Well, a lot of them also socialize. I think they probably just see each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm not a big goer-outer, and you're probably not a big goer-outer, and so you don't... You just don't really see those people a lot. And so I think it's just a question of... they're just... Some of them are just used to being... I don't know.
Yeah.
But in addition to, like, the level playing field thing, I just find, like, at a restaurant or a bar or someone like that, that I wouldn't... Because I never feel like... I know how it's going to play out, which is me going, hey, I'm a fan of yours. And I'm going, oh, thanks. And then I leave. And I guess it's fine to... do that just to let them know that they're appreciated, but there are some people at a certain level where you're like, yeah, they probably know.
I'll just tell you a story.
Yes.
Before the color coding changes.
Yes.
On your calendar, because then it's time for you to go. Before we go purple, but when I was in the movie Shop Girl that Steve Martin wrote.
Yes.
And part of the deal was that I had to go and talk to him. I had gone through every other stage of getting the part. But the final sort of thing is that he has to also feel good about you. And, you know, I don't know everything about Steve Martin, but I know he's probably a quiet person, and I don't want to make him uncomfortable, and we're going to have this meeting. But part of me is also thinking, you know, when am I ever going to talk to this guy again? And this is a guy also who had a big... in a lot of movies I saw growing up.
Of course.
And one of them, Three Amigos, that oddly is something that I quote, like, weekly.
It's an incredibly quotable movie.
Written, by the way, by Randy Newman.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
I did not know that,
he
actually.
And Lorne Michaels and Steve Martin and Randy Newman are the screenwriters, oddly. But I went to meet with him and I said to myself going in, don't... talk about Three Amigos.
Don't quote it.
That was a big part of my don't talk about Three Amigos. I mean, and I'm telling you, like a mantra almost. I walked into that meeting, I sat down with him, and I said, it's such a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Martin. May I just say right off the bat that Three Amigos changed my life, and I talk about it all the time, and because of that movie, I always wondered what it would be like to, like, eat a bat cooked over a fire. It seems so crunchy the way you guys are eating it.
And then you find your mouth is moving, your brain's
and
like,
it was bad. And I also had done something which was like I foresaw a scary thing like this happening, and so to kind of keep myself in line, I had written on my palm just a series of, like, things that I could talk about with him. And I was like this talking to him, and I was so nervous. I looked down, and all I saw was just a blue smudge because I had been so clammy that I lost all my bullet points. And it was it's a great example of how, so I guess you should just be yourself.
But it worked out, though.
Well, at the end, it seemed to have worked out, but also I could tell that it was, he would want to talk about some more
sure
where we were now.
Yeah.
Probably, but anyway.
I think part of it is just sort of realizing that, you know, that you're, and this is for anyone in any field, that, you know, that you're an interesting collection of molecules and you have opinions on things and they're just as valid as Steve Martin's opinion on things. And
I don't know about that, but it's, his opinion's the best.
That's such a... I know, as I say this, there are still a couple people that I, you know, like, he was one that I pursued the first couple years doing the podcast, and at a certain point I was like, no, because I just don't, he may be one of those people that I don't know if I could keep it together.
Well, I'll tell you, like, before you go too, like, in this one little thing, that this movie that, Listen Up, Philip,
that
I'm in, part of it has to do with this young writer who's an asshole, who meets his writing kind of literary hero that is played by Jonathan Pryce, who invites him to his home out of the city to sort of get out and think, because my character's talking about how upsetting the city is to him. And this is a character that I play who's really mean, says a lot of terrible things, and despite all these things that I could never imagine saying to people, and the way he treats, like, his girlfriend, and just totally out of the realm of my sort of normal life, I think, though my wife recently said, it's so funny that everyone thinks that this is a stretch for you. the idea that this character would accept going to his literary idol's house, that was the biggest stretch in the movie. Like, people are like, so what, was it hard to play an asshole? And honestly, not as hard as accepting an invitation by someone you admire to go spend some time with them. Like, I would never in a million years. Like I said to the director, Alex Ross Perry, if Brian Wilson or Paul McCartney said, get out of the city, come to Ojai, get out of Los Angeles, come to Santa Barbara, to my estate, I've got a piano there, and you can use my studio, record, think, I'd say, ah, it's so sweet of you, but I'm feeling sick right now, and I really should probably stay home. I don't think that there would be a way around this. You know what I'm saying? I just...
By the way, Jonathan Pryce, like, you must have been a Brazil fan.
That was tough. Yeah, that was, very hard. In fact, I brought my DVD of Brazil to get signed when I met him, and I kept it in my backpack, and I thought, I was just not going to ask. And then one day, my backpack was open. He's like, what have you got there with a Brazil DVD in your thing? And I was like, I was just...
My daughter.
Gotta get it signed for a friend.
His name is...
also Jason.
It's also Jason S.
Jason S, but he's Jason. It's not me. But no.
Jason Schwartz and the Nager.
It's tough with all this shit. I mean, I definitely have the ability to get shut down by these people.
But here's the thing. Because you're so...
I feel bad that you have to go, I think.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm worried about you having to go. But I just want to say this.
People wait... they wait for us.
I'm getting the 5 minute high sign.
Because he's got to go.
No, we have to go.
No, I'm not going on this show.
I
guess her job is to make sure that you get to where you need. This is about managing your calendar. You were just talking about this before. She's trying to help you.
Well, I'm not leaving.
Okay. Well, I just want to say, first of all, you're so lovely and sweet and wonderful that you should not worry about. Just lock the door.
You had to leave at 1 o'clock. You have a hard out.
No, I don't. I'm good. I'm
no,
good
you're
for
not.
A little bit.
I just saw your face.
No,
I
don't
saw
know
it
what
sort
time
of
it
change.
Is. No, I'll tell you what. We're fine. We're fine. We're totally fine. I don't have to be anywhere for like 2 hours. So
really,
yeah, we're good.
It's funny how people lie.
They do. Everyone.
I heard that you had to leave at 1.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. But I think you shouldn't worry about it because you're. You're very sweet, and you don't have any... Everyone... I think people know right away, like, hey, this guy is a nice guy. He's not trying to be a dick. And so they're not going to be shitty to you.
Well.
And you're also naturally, I mean, we had the conversation when you were gracious enough to let us cover West Coast with Billy D. Williams.
The best.
And we were talking and you're in the video and you're like, I just like talking to people. Like, you're naturally inquisitive. And I think that's what would make you good at doing an interview show, is because you really are curious about people.
I would love to talk to, have you ever, by the way, talked to Kurt Russell?
No, but I think he'd be amazing.
Because earlier when you were talking, I was thinking, because one episode particularly of yours, and I listen to them a lot, is the Rick Moranis one. I thought was pretty, it's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
And that was one where I was like, man, everything you're asking him is everything I wanted to know. And by the way, I loved how he was really connecting with you on a radio level. Talking about radio stations and...
Yeah.
And he really was talking about device. He really was into listening as a medium, which I thought... That's how he wanted to connect with you, it seemed like, in the beginning, with music and...
Yeah.
And it was interesting. But anyway, but I met Kurt Russell last year in the Sundance Film Festival. Its elevator door open. He was standing there. And I tried to walk the other direction, and it was like there was no way around him.
Right.
And we shook hands, and I described it at the time as like shaking someone's hand who all at once felt like the most masculine hand, but made out of diamonds and feathers.
Mm-hmm.
It was so, he was so soft, and yet that hand, you know, could crush yours.
Of course.
And, but that's a guy who's, I could talk, I mean, his eyes, it was so twinkly in the eyes, and he's someone that I think you should reach out to.
I think we've tried before.
Really?
There are a couple people that, maybe not, I don't know how hard, I think he would be amazing, and...
Big Trouble in Little China is, that's one that I watched all growing up a ton.
Chinese girls do not have green eyes.
No, they have green eyes.
I fucking love that movie so much.
Yeah,
it's me, like, Jack Burton.
They go like this in their hands.
Oh, and Kim Cattrall.
Oh, it's the best. Oh, it's just the best.
I was in love with her since Porky's.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course.
Yes.
And but I mean, I've been in love with her since... Yeah, Mannequin. I mean...
Mannequin!
I mean, that movie... When I saw Mannequin... When you're a kid and you have a crush, it's so hard because you know you will never get to kiss them.
Right.
There's no way she's going to kiss a 7-year-old.
That's why I fucked a lot of mannequins when I was like 12.
Just because of that.
Yeah, none of them came to life.
Yeah, they don't come to life. And that's why that movie should have had a disclaimer.
Mannequins do not come to life.
You know, Hollywood, the actor played Hollywood, died recently.
I know, Meshach Taylor.
Yeah, it was so...
Who was
that? That was hard. That was sad. And I love that. Mannequin 2 as well. There's a Mannequin 2.
Yeah, with Christy Swanson.
Yep.
I know these things.
I know. See,
Christy Swanson's another person that I can't... Because, like, you know, people... It's funny that, you know, when we talk about Buffy now, it's like, oh, Sarah Michelle Gellar and, you know...
She...
But Christy Swanson, Luke Perry, and Paul Rubens...
That's Buffy.
That was a good Buffy.
No, I know. You're on a level of knowing things about things that I will never be able to comprehend. I mean, you're... prowess. It's just unbelievable how much you know. I don't know how you know so much. I listen to your shows and I go, oh, that, like, I could have this conversation with Chris. We could talk about it. And then you will go somewhere, I'm like, how the fuck does he know that? And it's like, that's where this, it would be over for me. Like,
I don't think so.
You know,
a
lot.
You should do a show because I think this idea, you said something very casually, but I was like, that's a really great concept, is do things that are the opposite of you. You just said that, and that's a fucking great idea.
I was listening to an interview with the artist Chuck Close, who does these giant... is famous for doing... really became famous for doing these very photorealistic paintings of people. Giant, I mean, look like photographs from a distance. Now they're a bit more abstract, but... And he said in the interview... I chose this style of painting because it's the exact opposite of my nature. By nature, I'm very... these paintings take months, 6 months to do some of these, years. And I'm very impatient as a person, and I'm also very sloppy. And so I chose... It would be very easy for me to make a painting that was just more haphazard. Like, I don't know the word he used, but this is the exact opposite art that I should be making, which pretty interesting.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he like forced himself to do the opposite of what he would naturally want to be doing, which I found very perplexing.
This is why you need to start talking to people. I honestly think...
How
did you get the Laco? That's amazing!
Shit.
Well, I think we gotta let you go.
They really know how to stop you.
They really just know how to... She's doing good. She's doing you a favor, because you obviously have to... Are you doing more press today for Listen Up, Philip?
Yeah, but this is all I want to do.
Oh, buddy. Well, you live here now, but if you're in Los Angeles... I thought you lived here.
No, I'm living here for a few months... for work. I live in Los Angeles.
Well, then why are you not calling me to hang? I'm around.
No, you're not.
I am.
No, you're not.
Mostly, yes, okay. I'm kind of around.
But even just emailing, we've had a lot of fun emails back and forth, and I mean, I spend a lot of time just, at home doing nothing, but even if you just want to email me, just
I would
fun.
Love to.
But I'll come into the show anytime you want.
Please. And honestly, I think you would be great on At Midnight. I think you would be so great.
On At Midnight.
On At Midnight's this show I do for Comedy Central.
Oh, that. I thought you were like, because tonight I have a midnight Q&A.
Oh.
And I thought somehow you were saying you'd be great at it. I was like...
You're going to do great, kid.
How does he know I'm doing that show tonight?
I know that.
What am I going to be great tonight? How does he know? I'm terrible.
At minute 13.
Are you kidding me? I would love to do that.
Good. Okay, good.
Well, no, I would love to do it. I know that. I know that. I would do it in a heartbeat.
When you're back, in town...
How do I do that, though?
Just email me.
But what is the, like, when, like, how does that all work?
Well, you just come on and we just crack jokes about the internet, basically. That's it. It's fun.
Well, the internet is a strange place for me because I only really spend a lot of time in a few places, but a lot of time.
Yeah, and you don't have to know that much about everything. It's basically just you reacting to things, and we could get people on that you know so that it's like a big group of friends, and it'll be fun. Be really fun.
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Okay, good. Well, then we'll stay in contact, and then we'll...
If you're not doing anything at midnight, you can come to this.
I have to fly back to L.A., because I have to start work tomorrow. What is that? Why are you holding up a Macho Man? Oh, is that Rowdy Roddy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Rowdy Roddy Piper.
What was the movie he was in again?
They Live?
Yeah. No, but what was the other one he was in? It was another one, too, I think.
Was
it more romantic?
They Live to Kiss Each Other?
No, there was another one that wasn't They Live.
Was he in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days with Kate?
Let's look it up.
Okay.
Let's look him up as we're going.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
So IMDb.
For the dismount, we're going to go to IMDb. We're
because running. I think...
the
rubber bands in his
hair?
Captain Lou Albano.
He was also in this movie as a, I think, a big
enough.
You ever seen this movie, The Pervert's Guide to Ideology with Zizek?
I bought it on... I put it in a Netflix queue or something.
You should get it. I just saw Zizek on the street. And I stopped and said I should go back and talk to him, but I didn't.
See, we're going to help you break out. Oh, my God. His acting credits. He's been in 261 things. He's in A Bug's Life?
Go early.
94. Is it more like...
It's 80s.
Okay. 89... He was in The Big Picture? Fright Night 2.
Raymond Williams. Overboard. Oh, yeah, he's in Overboard.
The Wind in the Willows? Mr. Toad's Wild Ride? GoBots? Oh, my. I am so delighted by Rowdy Roddy Piper's resume.
A lot. Fright Night.
I have Callie here who would be so bummed that he's missing this part of this conversation.
This Girl for Hire, Small and Fry.
Fairy Tale Theater.
Tales of the Gold Monkey. I remember that.
We Fairy Tale Theater with Shelley Duvall.
Mm-hmm. He was on Fantasy Island.
There's one that's like romantic.
He was on Mork and Mindy, apparently. Heart to Heart. Well, okay, so now we're in the 70s. Would it be that far back?
No. Well,
when he was in The Cat from Outer Space.
Who is he in Overboard? Is he Kurt Russell's buddy?
I don't know, but maybe we do a Russell Piper Earth Angel.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm not seeing it.
No, he's more romantic. Yeah, it's definitely not They Live. It's definitely not a man. But anyway, you should get The Pervert's Guide to Ideology because it opens with They Live. saying that that's like the perfect movie to describe Ideology, because you put on these glasses and all of a sudden you see things for what they really are.
Oh.
Zizek blows my mind. He talks about what's that kind of candy, that like chocolate egg?
Cadbury eggs?
No, the other kind that has like a toy in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The European thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
like,
Kinder?
Yeah, he's like, this is a perfect example of why things are backwards. That we eat through the chocolate, the sweet, bad chocolate, to get this present. When really, it should be the present and then the chocolate on the inside. Like, he was like, I was like, oh.
Eat through the present.
God.
You know what we should do is just, let's get a picture on the couch, like one of those interview.
Was that all right?
That was amazing.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code Nerdist.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think, some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fu,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.